This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. For nearly 20 years, a public health program known as Safe Streets has been working to reduce violence and deaths by gunfire in Baltimore City. Focusing on training community members in conflict mediation, Safe Streets operates in some of the most troubled areas of the city. Catholic Charities of Baltimore runs four of the city's 10 Safe Street sites, overseeing Safe Streets offices in Penn North, Brooklyn, Sandtown, Winchester, and Cherry Hill. According to Catholic Charities, its Cherry Hill location has twice gone more than a year without a death by gunfire, and its Penn North location has marked more than 500 days without a death by gunfire. Joining us today to talk about Safe Streets is Kevin Keegan, who leads Catholic Charities Family Services Division, under which Safe Streets is housed. Also joining us is Greg Marshburn, director of Catholic Charities four Safe Street sites. Kevin and Greg, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, I thought we'd start with you, Greg. For those who might not be too familiar with Safe Streets, could you give us an idea of what the goals of the program are? What is its approach to nonviolence?
So Safe Streets' approach to nonviolence is source of public health initiative to reduce shootings and homicides in target areas in Baltimore City. And how they go about doing that is they interrupt and intervene in potentially violent conflicts, identify and treat the high risk, and ultimately mobilize the community to change behavioral norms. So they begin to be the change that they want to see in the community.
How do you find the Safe Street workers?
So we know that relationships is everything. So how we do it is, I always say this, God's work, because you never thought that it was a job would be created for people that had formerly messed their lives up. So you take those people who used to rob, steal, sell drugs, and be a part of the, and that precipitated the shootings and homicide. And now you take them, they're ready to change their life and teach them conflict mediation training, conflict resolution training, and then inject them back into the same environments that they once wreaked havoc again as an antidote against the disease of violence.
And these are people who want to make change in the community. They've experienced some of the violence themselves. Is that right?
Right. And so when you, what you don't want a person's anger to do is transfer to you once you, when you're in the middle of a conflict. But one of the major questions people have, if they don't know you, they want to know who you are. But that's why we get those people from those communities, because they're well known. They know them since they was kids. They know aunts, uncles, grandmothers, everybody. And we use all that to help us mediate conflicts.
And what kind of training do they undergo?
So they get trained as violence interrupters and how to go out and build the rapport, right? To interrupt, to intervene in conflicts. And they teach you the different types of mediations, because mediation by definition in the dictionary differs from all the different types of mediations that we may see and may encounter.
What are some of the kinds of tools that you give them to practically go about interrupting violence on the streets?
So we teach them to be understanding and not to take another individual's anger personally, that they're just angry. It's, even if they directed at them, we know that we come in peace and we didn't do anything to them. So we know that we're just there as a temporary target until we begin to bring them down from 10 to zero by talking to them, by calming them down, by removing them from the scene. Sometimes we take them out to eat, sit them down and calm them down. And then we begin to explain to them all the scenarios, because we've been down this path and we don't have to walk down it again to explain to them where they're going if they precipitate this violence. Mm.
And all these workers, they undergo background checks and vetting and that sort of thing?
Yes. Yes.
Do they come to you asking to be part of the program, or do you go out into the community looking for viable candidates for the program?
So what we do is, we originally, we go out into the community and We have people that work for us that's widespread across Baltimore. So they're in every community. So they know who's who of the who's who. So we originally get that team. And once that team moves up or moves out, they're constantly working at identifying future prospects for individuals to take their place once they move on.
So once they undergo the training, what are some of the things that they do? Do they go out to festivals? Are they on the streets daily? Like what are some of the things they do after they receive their training?
So they go out into the community. So we identify, we look at the data that we're provided with, and we identify hotspots in the community where the shootings or homicide spikes and the times that they spike. And that's the times that they're in the community. So we put them in twos in those areas where they're well known, and they build the rapport with people they know, with people they don't know. They keep an eye out, paying attention to when something may be brewing that they can get in front of, because we are a proactive program where we get in front of things and calm them down before they go too far.
It seems like relationship building is at the heart of this. Is that fair? And why is that important?
Because if you don't have a relationship, then how can you even talk to somebody? One thing about where we come from, if you never speak to me when I'm on zero, then you definitely can't speak to me when I'm on 10. Mm-hmm. So we have to build a relationship by offering resources, finding out what they need. We ask them, how can we help them? I mean, little things is like with the elderly, can I take your trash out? Just starting a conversation, explain to them who we are, what we do, that we're working for them to keep them safe and change hoods back to neighborhoods and communities where people come out and commune like they previously did.
Kevin, I wonder if you could tell us how Catholic Charities got involved in this program.
Sure. I mean, I think for many, many years, Catholic Charities has been involved around the issue of violence, whether it be dealing with homelessness, dealing with hunger, dealing with substance use, dealing with poverty issues. But at some point in time, and in this case, it was specifically right after the Freddie Gray fallout in West Baltimore. I mean, there's a decision that you have to make to at some point get directly involved in the issue of violence. So it's not just accidental to be a part of the other things you're doing, but it's intentional. And you really have to decide that keeping people alive first and foremost is the issue we're trying to address here. So in this, whether it be through Safe Streets with violence reduction, or in our behavioral health treatment where we were only doing substance use, but the reality, I mean, where we were only doing mental health, but it's substances that were killing people. So about the same amount of time ago, we started to provide substance use treatment as well. We need to keep people alive, and then we can help people to address all of those other issues, but keeping people alive is number one. So that's how we got in.
And you operate the four locations that I mentioned. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. We right after Freddie Gray in 2016, we opened the Sandtown location. Back in about 5 years ago now, we opened the Brooklyn location, and just over a year ago, about 15 months ago, we took on Penn North as well as Cherry Hill.
Okay. And how many Safe Street workers are there across all the four sites? How many in general across all 10 sites, I guess, and then how many that work at the four Catholic Charities locations?
So 83 altogether when fully staffed across the 10. Okay. But with Catholic Charities, including myself, 36 when fully staffed.
And could you give some examples of the way Safe Streets workers at the Catholic Charities locations have diffused violence? Or maybe you've had some personal experiences on the streets, Greg, that you could share with us?
People owing people money. You know, as Kevin spoke about, it's a lot of drug activity in those communities, and they're fighting over somebody not wanting to share their drugs or giving them fake drugs, you know, and breaking in their cars. It's a lot of property crime. And, it's just like some neighbors, we try to take it back to community because some neighbors don't even look out for each other, speak to each other. They live right next door to each other and get into an argument or fight. So these are the things that we have to diffuse. And we do this by, we build a rapport with the community, and they give us phone calls. They let us know y'all need to get around here, this going on, or social media starts a lot of things. So they may see their children going through something on social media, call us around and ask us to get in front of it, because now people coming from a whole nother community converging on a block. And so we have to get out there and mediate this conflict before it goes too far. Mm-hmm.
And I understand you also distribute materials in the community. What kind of information do you give out?
So we give out, we call it public education materials, PubEd. It teaches about our program. It gives you job resources. It refers you to food pantries where you can get clothes from. You know, we can take you get your GED, your Social Security card, anything that you may need to succeed and come up out of the rut that you're in. We will provide it for you, and if we don't have it, we'll find it. We'll find who has you and refer you to it.
We talked about the effectiveness of the program just in terms of the statistics. Kevin, maybe you could elaborate a little bit more about that. How effective is Safe Streets? And I know there was the study that the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health had done. Could you share some of those?
It's a very, very detailed 34-page report, which we don't have time to talk about today, but just probably the biggest highlight to me is across all active sites, there was a 23% reduction in shootings. And when you think about it, that it's just in non-fatal shootings. That's a remarkable achievement. And when you look at the longer running sites, it's a 32% reduction in homicides. So it truly is. Those statistics alone, I think, speak directly to the work that Greg is describing.
How much does it cost annually to operate Safe Streets?
You know, reality is we employ, about 8 people at each site, a couple more at Sandtown because it's a little bit of a larger post. Think about it. It's critically important that we pay a living wage to all the people that work for us. And that's something we have always aimed to do. So by the time you pay salaries to those 8 people in each site and then be able to, we do rent a space for each site and there's lots of activities and things that we do. It's upwards of $700,000 to $800,000 per site annually. So we do have a 3-year contract for 4 sites. It's millions of dollars once you add all of those up. It's I think important to point out, though, we don't get a lump sum from the city. We spend a nickel, we get reimbursed a nickel. And the reality is, when you work with the city, you get reimbursed that nickel about 6 months later on. I mean, so it's an expensive prospect to run a program like this, because even, if you add that up just and you don't get paid for, 4, 5, 6 months just for the process, you can easily be out $500,000, $1 million, waiting to get paid. So it's an expensive prospect to run the program. But again, we have to pay people a living wage. If we want people to stay doing this work rather than fall back into other work, then we have to make sure we're paying them a living wage where they can support their family and do what they need to do.
Our guests today are Kevin Keegan, who leads Catholic Charities Family Services Division, which operates Safe Streets, 4 locations of Catholic Charities Safe Streets program, and also Greg Marshburn, the director of Catholic Charities for Safe Street Sites. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation, and we'll talk a little bit more about a new office for the Cherry Hill site of Safe Streets. I'm George Matisek. You're listening to Catholic Review Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Call to the Fullness of Dignity is the theme of this year's Religious Freedom Week of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. The observance opens June 22nd, the feast day of Saints Thomas More and John Fisher, both English martyrs who fought religious persecution. The week ends June 29th, the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, and includes the Nativity of Saint John the Baptist, which is June 24th. Building on this year's annual report by the USCCB's Committee on Religious Liberty, Religious Freedom Week 2024 highlights concerns about attacks on houses of worship. Religious Freedom Week also calls attention to threats to Catholic ministries that serve immigrants. The USCCB noted that in recent years, Christian services to migrants have faced what it called aggressive accusations by both media personalities and political leaders seeking to advance a certain narrative about current immigration trends. One recent example of political leaders' aggressive moves against assistance for migrants by churches and other nonprofits is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's attempt to shut down El Paso's Annunciation House, a Catholic nonprofit serving migrants. A couple of months ago, after Paxton's previous effort was blocked by a judge, his office said May 8th it filed an application for a temporary injunction against Annunciation House, accusing it of, quote, systemic criminal conduct in Texas, end quote, including facilitating illegal border crossings or concealing, quote, illegally present aliens from law enforcement, end quote. Annunciation House's lawyer said those are false allegations. In his earlier attempt to shut down Annunciation House, Paxton accused it of human smuggling, which was denounced by Catholic immigration advocates, including El Paso Bishop Mark J. Seitz. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. For Catholic Review Media, I'm Kevin Parks.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. We're talking today about Safe Streets, a program designed to reduce violence and deaths by gunfire in Baltimore City. Our guests are Kevin Keegan, who leads Catholic Charities Family Services Division, under which Safe Streets is housed, and also our other guest is Greg Marshburn, Director of Catholic Charities for Safe Streets Sites. Gentlemen, could you tell us about the new office at Catholic Charities is running for the Cherry Hill location of Safe Streets? Where was the previous office, and why did you guys move to the Cherry Hill Town Center?
Greg, I can start and you can jump in if you, but back in January of 23, we took the Cherry Hill site into, it was formerly run by the Family Health Centers of Baltimore in Cherry Hill. They no longer could run the site. In fact, they're no longer in business. So we, as the city evolved the way it was administering, so at some point, 10 sites were managed by 8 different community-based organizations like ourselves. And it was messy. It was hard to organize 8 different organizations running 10 programs. So the decision was made by the city, and I think it was a very wise decision to limit to 2 CBOs to manage the overall 10 sites. So at that point, we moved to 4 sites, including Cherry Hill. At that point in time, Cherry Hill was operating out of they were in a parking lot, basically in a trailer, and really with limited space and limited visibility. That was really the biggest issue. And one of the advantages we have is we own the Cherry Hill Town Center and really have had goals of really making the Cherry Hill Town Center an institution for the community where they can really benefit from what's there. And one of the things we really thought could benefit was the presence of the Safe Street site. So for about the past 15 months since we took the Safe Street site on, we moved them out of the trailer and they were over in the old elementary school with Elevate program, right in the heart of Cherry Hill still, but a little less visible. And we were excited to finally be able to have the right space for them in the town center. And I think the biggest quality, and I said it once already, but it's the issue of visibility. We really want Safe Streets to have a presence, to be visible, for people to know where they are, to be seen. And that's really just incredibly important to the whole program, to all the sites. But I think in Cherry Hill, this space provided us that perfect opportunity.
Yeah, the Cherry Hill Town Center really is the center of Cherry Hill. You've got St. Veronica Catholic Church is right down the street within walking distance. And
yep. We run the Head Start program over at St. Veronica's as well. So, Catholic Charities has a pretty big footprint in that area. And it's we really want to be a part of the community there.
What kind of partnerships does Safe Streets rely on? I know you have a good relationship with J.P. Morgan Chase, who donated $150,000 toward the renovation of the office space in Cherry Hill. Can you talk about those partnerships and the importance of those partnerships? Maybe Greg?
So, Cherry Hill. So each one of our sites have different partners because their communities look different. But in Cherry Hill, they have the Cherry Hill Coalition, and there is it's a whole bunch of community organizations that meet regularly and keep each other up to date with jobs and things and laws that have been passed and everything. So they are very close knit out there. So they basically get everything done within that coalition. But they also partner with like Well, we just got a mental health, so we don't have to partner outside with mental health anymore. So we have our own mental health program, but we partner with mentoring programs, like
people and I can jump in there too. We also partner with MedStar, the hospital, a really good partner in the neighborhood. All the neighbors in the town center. We got the library. You got other organizations there. But as you mentioned, Chase Bank, they provided the vast majority of funds, the private funds needed to convert the former, Y&J carryout, which had been operating there for a long time. There was lots of grease that happened in that place. And there was a whole lot of work that needed to bring that up to speed. And really just looks at the office is beautiful, but it was 160,000. I think they donated for the renovations. And that was a really generous donation that made it possible.
Greg, I wonder if you could touch base on the faith element in all of this. Do you ever get an opportunity for faith sharing or prayer when you're in the community trying to diffuse violence? Or do people ever ask for prayer? Does that faith dimension ever come into play?
So we have some individuals that work for us that have different denominations of their faith base. So everybody's not open to it, but you do have some people. And what we do is we don't like to force it. But like I myself, I'm Christian. So it's my job to whenever I encounter somebody that's open to it, I can offer them that and use it as a way to help them out and get them to change the way they think or whatever. But we do have those opportunities, but they are seldom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How would you both say that Safe Streets has evolved since it launched nearly 20 years ago? What have you learned about what works and what doesn't work?
One of the things that became really clear to us is not long after we started the work was the toll that the work takes on the workers themselves. Mm. So we approached the city not too long after that and asked if they would be open to us developing because we do offer behavioral health services as well as the Catholic Charities and have a very, very heavy focus on trauma-informed care across all of our programs. So we wanted to make sure that we provided support to our teams, to not just our teams, but also LifeBridge's six teams. So to all 10 sites across the Safe Streets work, to provide them with education, kind of ongoing trauma support and behavioral health support, as well as when incidents do occur, to be able to have staff there on site to be able to respond and help talk through people through those crises. Because people come to us with a crisis, with a trauma history, and then there is daily exposure to traumatic situations of varying degrees in the work they do. And we really need to support them through that. And, you know, there's constantly an awareness. We're looking at data. We're looking at where we can do things better. And most recently, you know, we're talking to the city about how we can actually get behind the walls of prisons and let some of our staff begin. Because a number of the shootings that occur in Baltimore actually occur as a result of somebody coming out of prison and somebody wanting to settle an old beef, which, you know, somebody coming out of prison wanting to shoot somebody or getting shot. And there's story after story of how that's happened. So we've approached Monsey about how we can do something about that and really help to diffuse those situations before that individual comes out. So the work is constantly evolving. I think the data really is driving what we do. And I appreciate the city for being open to change.
And another thing that we realized in work was having all men to do the work. We realized that we needed the woman element because they were nurturers in a different way, and they approach situations, especially with females. They were, if a female was angry with a guy, here come some guys, and they trying to mediate a conflict, and now they mad at us, thinking we automatically gonna take the guy's side. So we had to bring some females, and they brought a different and a much better element to help us be more cohesive in the work that we was doing, because violence is constantly changing. It's constantly changing, whereas though it was a code that they went by, the code was ripped up, and it's a whole nother code. It used to be no women and children. Now they don't care about that. So we had to start evolving and coming up with more different tactics to address that, because it's constantly, and it could change tomorrow. We just have to be vigilant and diligent and paying attention to the change so we can adapt.
We have about a minute left. How can people learn more about Safe Streets? And is there any way that people can offer support to the program?
We have a website. I think we have one on Catholic Charities and with the city at Muncie. And we also, they can visit any Safe Street site, any Safe Street, any one of our sites or anywhere. And we have what you call rat cards. And it explains what we do, how we do it, why we do it.
I think more than anything, too, I mean, you know, the guys and ladies wearing these orange shirts, that's what they have. They have that and their reputation, and they're standing between people with guns, and they're saving lives every day. And, you know, similar to what we, you know, hope people do with the police, we want to, you know, just thank them for their work. These are individuals who come to us with some, you know, challenging backgrounds at times, and they've made a decision to change their lives. And they literally put their lives at risk almost every day they come to work. So I think some degree of respect, just a huge level of respect and appreciation for what they do. I'm humbled to work with them every day, to even just be in their presence. So yeah, I think that more than anything, just keep people in your prayers, keep people in your thoughts, and you know, offer them support if you happen to run into them.
Great. Well, our guests today have been Kevin Keegan, who leads Catholic Charities Family Services Division, and also Greg Marshburn, the director of Catholic Charities for Safe Street Sites. Kevin and Greg, thanks again for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Thank you.
For Catholic Review Radio, I'm George Matisek. Thanks for listening.
Remember the spirit of your parish community, the power of worshiping together, the warmth of friends new and old who share your faith. Join us for Mass this weekend. Visit archbell.org to find a Catholic parish near you. Feel the joy.
The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice-weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Read it today in print or online at catholicreview.org. That's catholicreview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week. Available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area, and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.